Amen, every possible moment of vision that may arise from it. As fate, resoluteness is freedom to give up some definite resolution, and to give it up in accordance with the demands of some possible situation or other. The steadiness of existence is not interrupted thereby, but confirmed in the moment of vision. This steadiness is not first formed either through or by the adjoining of moments one to another, but these arise from the temporality of that repetition which is futurally in the process of having been, a temporality which has already been stretched along. In inauthentic historicality, on the other hand, the way in which fate has been primordially stretched along has been hidden. With the inconstancy of the they-self, Dasein makes present its today. In awaiting the next new thing, it has already forgotten the old one. The they evades choice. Blind for possibilities, it cannot repeat what has been, but only retains and receives the actual that is left over, the world historical that has been, the leavings, and the information about them that is present at hand. Lost in the making present of the today, it understands the past in terms of the present. On the other hand, the temporality of authentic historicality, as the moment of vision, of anticipatory repetition, deprives the today of its character as present, and weans one from the conventionalities of the they. When, however, one's existence is inauthentically historical, it is loaded down with the legacy of a past which has become unrecognizable, and it seeks the modern. But when historicality is authentic, it understands history as the recurrence of the possible, and knows that a possibility will recur only if existence is open for it fatefully, in a moment of vision, in resolute repetition. The existential interpretation of Dasein's historicality is constantly getting eclipsed unawares. The obscurities are all the harder to dispel when we have not disentangled the possible dimensions of the appropriate inquiry, and when everything is haunted by the enigma of being, and, as has now been made plain, by that of motion. Nevertheless, we may venture a projection of the ontological genesis of historiology as a science in terms of Dasein's historicality. This projection will serve to prepare us for the clarification of the task of destroying the history of philosophy historiologically, a clarification which is to be accomplished in what follows.
Section 76.
The existential source of historiology in Dasein's historicality. We need not discuss the fact that historiology, like any science, is, as a kind of being of Dasein, factically dependent at any time on the prevailing world view. Beyond this, we must inquire into the ontological possibility of how the sciences have their source in Dasein's state of being. This source is still not very transparent. In the context which lies before us, our analysis will acquaint us in outline with the existential source of historiology only to the extent of bringing still more plainly to light the historicality of Dasein and the fact that this historicality is rooted in temporality. If Dasein's being is in principle historical, then every factical science is always manifestly in the grip of this historizing. But historiology still has Dasein's historicality as its presupposition, in its own quite special way. This can be made plain in the first instance by the suggestion that historiology, as the science of Dasein's history, must presuppose as its possible object the entity which is primordially historical. But history must not only be in order that a historiological object may become accessible, and historiological cognition is not only historical as a historizing way in which Dasein comports itself. Whether the historiological disclosure of history is factically accomplished or not, its ontological structure is such that in itself this disclosure has its roots in the historicality of Dasein. This is the connection we have in view when we talk of Dasein's historicality as the existential source of historiology. To cast light upon this connection signifies methodologically that the idea of historiology must be projected ontologically in terms of Dasein's historicality. The issue here is not one of abstracting the concept of historiology from the way something is factically done in the sciences today, nor is it one of assimilating it to anything of this sort. For what guarantee do we have in principle that such a factical procedure will indeed be properly representative of historiology and its primordial and authentic possibilities? And even if this should turn out to be the case, we shall hold back from any decision about this, then the concept could be discovered in the fact only by using the clue provided by the idea of historiology as one which we have already understood. On the other hand, the existential idea of historiology is not given a higher justification by having the historian affirm that his factical behaviour is in agreement with it, nor does the idea become false if he disputes any such agreement. The idea of historiology as a science implies that the disclosure of historical entities is what it has seized upon as its own task. Every science is constituted primarily by thematizing. That which is familiar pre-scientifically in Dasein as disclosed being in the world gets projected upon the being which is specific to it. With this projection, the realm of entities is bounded off. The ways of access to them get managed methodologically, and the conceptual structure for interpreting them is outlined. If we may postpone the question of whether a history of the present is possible and assign zuweisen to historiology the task of disclosing the past, then the historiological thematizing of history is possible only if, in general, the past has in each case already been disclosed. Quite apart from the question of whether sufficient sources are available for the historiological envisagement of the past, the way to it must in general be open if we are to go back to it historiologically. It is by no means patent that anything of the sort is the case, or how this is possible. But insofar as Dasein's being is historical, that is to say, insofar as, by reason of its extatico-horizontal temporality, it is open in its character of having been, the way is in general prepared for such thematizing of the past as can be accomplished in existence. And because Dasein, and only Dasein, is primordially historical, that which historiological thematizing presents as a possible object for research must have the kind of being of Dasein which has been there. Along with any factical Dasein as being in the world, there is also, in each case, world history. If Dasein is there no longer, then the world too is something that has been there. This is not in conflict with the fact that, all the same, what was formerly ready to hand within the world does not yet pass away, but becomes something that one can, in a present, come across historiologically as something which has not passed away, and which belongs to the world that has been there. Remains, monuments, and records that are still present at hand are possible material for the concrete disclosure of the Dasein which has been there. Such things can turn into historiological material only because, in accordance with their own kind of being, they have a world historical character. And they become such material only when they have been understood in advance with regard to their within-the-worldness. The world that has already been projected is given a definite character by way of an interpretation of the world historical material we have received. Our going back to the past does not first get its start from the acquisition, sifting and securing of such material. These activities presuppose historical being towards the Dasein that has been there. That is to say, they presuppose the historicality of the historian's existence. This is the existential foundation for historiology as a science, even for its most trivial and mechanical procedures. If historiology is rooted in historicality in this manner, then it is from here that we must determine what the object of historiology really is. The delimitation of the primordial theme of historiology will have to be carried through in conformity with the character of authentic historicality and its disclosure of what has been there, that is to say, in conformity with repetition as this disclosure. In repetition, the Dasein which has been there is understood in its authentic possibility, which has been. The birth of historiology from authentic historicality therefore signifies that in taking as our primary theme the historiological object, we are projecting the Dasein which has been there upon its ownmost possibility of existence. Is historiology thus to have the possible for its theme? Does not its whole meaning point solely to the facts, to how something has factually been? But what does it signify to say that Dasein is factual? If Dasein is really actual only in existence, then its factuality is constituted precisely by its resolute projection of itself upon a chosen potentiality for being. But if so, that which authentically has been there factually is the existentiel possibility in which fate, destiny, and world history have been factically determined. Because in each case existence is only as factically thrown, historiology will disclose the quiet force of the possible with greater penetration. The more simply and the more concretely having been in the world is understood in terms of its possibility, and only presented as such. If historiology, which itself arises from authentic historicality, reveals by repetition the Dasein which has been there and reveals it in its possibility, then historiology has already made manifest the universal in the once for all. The question of whether the object of historiology is just to put once for all individual events into a series, or whether it also has laws as its objects, is one that is radically mistaken. The theme of historiology is neither that which has happened just once for all, nor something universal that floats above it, but the possibility which has been factically existent. This possibility does not get repeated as such, that is to say, understood in an authentically historiological way, if it becomes perverted into the colourlessness of a supra-temporal model. Only by historicality which is factical and authentic can the history of what has been there, as a resolute fate, be disclosed in such a manner that in repetition the force of the possible gets struck home into one's factical existence. In other words, that it comes towards that existence in its futural character. The historicality of unhistoriological Dasein does not take its departure from the present and from what is actual only today, in order to grope its way back from there to something that is past, and neither does historiology. Even historiological disclosure temporalizes itself in terms of the future. The selection of what is to become a possible object for historiology has already been met with in the factical existentiel choice of Dasein's historicality, in which historiology first of all arises, and in which alone it is. The historiological disclosure of the past is based on fateful repetition, and is so far from subjective that it alone guarantees the objectivity of historiology. For the objectivity of a science is regulated primarily in terms of whether that science can confront us with the entity which belongs to it as its theme, and can bring it, uncovered in the primordiality of its being, to our understanding. In no science are the universal validity of standards and the claims to universality which the they and its common sense demand less possible as criteria of truth than in authentic historiology. Only because in each case the central theme of historiology is the possibility of existence which has been there, and because the latter exists factically in a way which is world historical, can it demand of itself that it takes its orientation inexorably from the facts? Accordingly, this research, as factical, has many branches and takes for its object the history of equipment, of work, of culture, of the spirit, and of ideas. As handing itself down, history is, in itself, at the same time, and in each case, always in an interpretedness which belongs to it, and which has a history of its own. So for the most part it is only through traditional history that historiology penetrates to what has been there itself. This is why concrete historiological research can, in each case, maintain itself in varying closeness to its authentic theme. If the historian throws himself straight away into the world view of an era, He has not thus proved as yet that he understands his object in an authentically historical way, and not just aesthetically. And on the other hand, the existence of a historian who only edits sources may be characterized by historicality which is authentic. Thus, the very prevalence of a differentiated interest, even in the most remote and primitive cultures, is in itself no proof of the authentic historicality of a time. In the end, the emergence of a problem of historicism is the clearest symptom that historiology endeavors to alienate Dasein from its authentic historicality. Such historicality does not necessarily require historiology. It is not the case that unihistoriological eras as such are unhistorical also. The possibility that historiology in general can either be used for one's own life or abused in it is grounded on the fact that one's life is historical in the roots of its being, and that therefore, as practically existing, one has in each case made one's decision for authentic or inauthentic historicality. Nietzsche recognized what was essential as to the use and abuse of historiology for life in the second of his studies, Out of Season, 1874, and said it unequivocally and penetratingly. He distinguished three kinds of historiology, the monumental, the antiquarian, and the critical, without explicitly pointing out the necessity of this triad or the ground of its unity. The threefold character of historiology is adumbrated in the historicality of Dasein. At the same time, this historicality enables us to understand to what extent these three possibilities must be united factically and concretely in any historiology which is authentic. Nietzsche's division is not accidental. The beginning of his study allows us to suppose that he understood more than he has made known to us. As historical, Dasein is possible only by reason of its temporality. And temporality temporalizes itself in the ecstatico-horizonal unity of its raptures. Dasein exists authentically as futural in resolutely disclosing a possibility which it has chosen. Coming back resolutely to itself, it is, by repetition, open for the monumental possibilities of human existence. The historiology which arises from such historicality is monumental, as in the process of having been, Dasein has been delivered over to its thrownness. When the possible is made one's own by repetition, there is adumbrated at the same time the possibility of reverently preserving the existence that has been there, in which the possibility seized upon has become manifest. Thus, authentic historiology, as monumental, is antiquarian too. Dasein temporalizes itself in the way the future and having been are united in the present. The present discloses that today, authentically, and of course as the moment of vision. But insofar as this today has been interpreted in terms of understanding a possibility of existence which has been seized upon, an understanding which is repetitive in a futural manner, authentic historiology becomes a way in which the today gets deprived of its character as present. In other words, it becomes a way of painfully detaching oneself from the falling publicness of the today. As authentic, the historiology which is both monumental and antiquarian is necessarily a critique of the present. Authentic historicality is the foundation for the possibility of uniting these three ways of historiology. But the ground on which authentic historiology is founded is temporality, as the existential meaning of the being of care. The existential historical source of historiology may be presented concretely by analyzing the thematization which is constitutive for this science. In historiological thematizing, the main point is the cultivation of the hermeneutical situation which, once the historically existent Dasein has made its resolution, opens itself to the repetitive disclosure of what has been there. The possibility and the structure of historiological truth are to be expounded in terms of the authentic disclosedness, truth, of historical existence. But since the basic concepts of the historiological sciences, whether they pertain to the objects of these sciences or to the way in which these are treated, are concepts of existence, the theory of the humane science presupposes an existential interpretation which has as its theme the historicality of Dasein. Such an interpretation is the constant goal to which the researchers of Wilhelm Dilthey seek to bring us closer, and which gets illumined in a more penetrating fashion by the ideas of Count Yorck von Wartenburg.
Section 77.
The connection of the foregoing exposition of the problem of historicality with the researches of Wilhelm Dilthey and the ideas of Count Yorck. The analysis of the problem of history which we have just carried through has arisen in the process of appropriating the labours of Dilthey. It has been corroborated and at the same time strengthened by the theses of Count Yorck, which are found scattered through his letters to him. The image of Dilthey which is still widely disseminated today is that of the sensitive interpreter of the history of the spirit, especially the history of literature, who also endeavours to distinguish between the natural and the humane sciences, thereby assigning, zuweist, a distinctive role to the history of the latter group, and likewise to psychology, then allowing the whole to merge together in a relativistic philosophy of life. Considered superficially, this sketch is correct, but the substance eludes it, and it covers up more than it reveals. We may divide Dilthey's researches schematically into three domains: studies on the theory of the humane sciences and the distinction between these and the natural sciences, researches into the history of the sciences of man, society, and the state, endeavours towards a psychology in which the whole fact of man is to be presented, investigations in the theory of science in historical science and in psychological hermeneutics, are constantly permeating and intersecting each other. Where any one point of view predominates, the others are the motives and the means. What looks like disunity and an unsure, haphazard way of trying things out is an elemental restlessness, the one goal of which is to understand life philosophically, and to secure for this understanding a hermeneutical foundation in terms of life itself. Everything centres in psychology, in which life is to be understood, in the historical context of its development and its effects, and understood as the way in which man, as the possible object of the humane sciences, and especially as the root of these sciences, is. Hermeneutics is the way this understanding enlightens itself. It is also the methodology of historiology, though only in a derivative form. In the contemporaneous discussions, Dilthey's own researches for laying the basis for the humane sciences were forced one-sidedly into the field of the theory of science. And it was, of course, with a regard for such discussions that his publications were often oriented in this direction. But the logic of the humane sciences was by no means central for him, no more than he was striving in his psychology merely to make improvements in the positive science of the psychical. Dilthey's friend, Count Yorck, gives an ambiguous expression to Dilthey's own most philosophical tendency in the communications between them, when he alludes to our common interest in understanding historicality. Dilthey's researches are only now becoming accessible in their full scope. If we are to make them our own, we need the steadiness and concreteness of coming to terms with them in principle. This is not the place, ought, for discussing in detail the problems which moved him, or how he was moved by them. We shall, however, describe in a provisional way some of Count Yorck's central ideas by selecting characteristic passages from the letters. In these communications, Yorck's own tendency is brought to life by the labours of Dilthey and his ways of formulating questions, and it shows itself when Yorck takes his stand as to the tasks of the discipline which is to lay the basis, analytical psychology. On Dilthey's Academy paper, Ideen über eine beschreibende und zergliedernde Psychologie, 1894, he writes, "It gets firmly laid down that the consideration of the self is the primary means of knowing, and that the primary procedure of knowing is analysis. From this standpoint, principles get formulated which are verified by their own findings. No progress is made towards critically breaking down constructive psychology and its assumptions, or towards explaining it and thus refuting it from within. Briefwechsel, page 177. Your disregard for breaking things down critically, that is, for demonstrating their provenience psychologically, and carrying this out trenchantly in detail, is connected, in my opinion, with your conception of the theory of knowledge, and with the position which you assign, zuweisen, to it, page 177. Only a theory of knowledge gives the explanation for this inapplicability. The fact of it has been laid down and made plain. It has to render account for the adequacy of scientific methods. It has to provide the grounds for a doctrine of method, instead of having its methods taken, at a venture I must say, from particular areas. Page 179 and the following pages. At bottom, York is demanding a logic that shall stride ahead of the sciences and guide them, as did the logic of Plato and Aristotle. And this demand includes the task of working out, positively and radically, the different categorical structures of those entities which are nature and of those which are history, Dasein. York finds that Dilthey's investigations put too little stress on differentiation generically between the ontical and the historical. In particular, the procedure of comparison is claimed to be the method for the humane sciences. Here I disagree with you. Comparison is always aesthetic and always adheres to the pattern of things. Windelband assigns, weist zu, patterns to history. Your concept of the type is an entirely inward one. Here it is a matter of characteristics, not of patterns. For Windelband, history is a series of pictures, of individual patterns, an aesthetic demand. To the natural scientist there remains, beside his science, as a kind of human tranquilizer, only aesthetic enjoyment. But your conception of history as that of a nexus of forces, of unities of force, to which the category of pattern is to be applicable only by a kind of transference, page 193. In terms of his sure instinct for differentiating between the ontical and the historical, York knew how strongly traditional historical research still maintains itself in purely ocular ways of ascertaining, page 192, which are aimed at the corporeal and at that which has pattern. Ranke is a great ocularist for whom things that have vanished can never become actualities. Ranke's whole tribe also provides the explanation for the way the material of history has been restricted to the political. Only the political is dramatic, page 60. The modifications which the course of time has brought appear unessential to me, and I should like to appraise this very differently. For instance, I regard the so-called historical school as a mere side stream within the same riverbed, and as representing only one branch of an old and thoroughgoing opposition. The name is somewhat deceptive. That school was by no means a historical one, but an antiquarian one, construing things aesthetically, while the great dominating activity was one of mechanical construction. Hence what it contributed methodologically to the method of rationality was only a general feeling, page 68 and the following pages. The genuine philologus, he conceives of history as a cabinet of antiquities, where nothing is palpable, whither one has been guided only by a living psychical transposition. These gentlemen never come. At heart they are natural scientists, and they become sceptics all the more because experimentation is lacking. We must keep wholly aloof from all such rubbish, for instance, as how often Plato was in Magna Graecia or Syracuse. On this nothing vital depends. This superficial affectation, which I have seen through critically, winds up at last with a big question mark and is put to shame by the great realities of Homer, Plato, and the New Testament. Everything that is actually real becomes a mere phantom when one considers it as a thing in itself, when it does not get experienced. Page 61. These scientists stand over against the powers of the times like the over-refined French society of the revolutionary period. Here, as there, formalism, the cult of the form, the defining of relationship is the last word in wisdom. Naturally, thought which runs in this direction has its own history, which I suppose is still unwritten. The groundlessness of such thinking and of any belief in it, and such thinking epistemologically considered is a metaphysical attitude, is a historical product, page 39. It seems to me that the groundswells evoked by the principle of eccentricity, which led to a new era more than 400 years ago, have become exceedingly broad and flat, that our knowledge has progressed to the point of cancelling itself out, that man has withdrawn so far from himself that he no longer sees himself at all. The modern man, that is to say the post-Renaissance man, is ready for burial, page 83. On the other hand, all history that is truly alive and not just reflecting a tinge of life is a critique, page 19. But historical knowledge is, for the best part, knowledge of the hidden sources, page 109. With history, what makes a spectacle and catches the eye is not the main thing. The nerves are invisible just as the essentials in general are invisible. While it is said that if you were quiet, you would be strong, the variant is also true that if you are quiet, you will perceive, that is, understand, page 26. And then I enjoy the quietude of soliloquizing and communing with the spirit of history. This spirit is one who did not appear to Faust in his study, or to Master Goethe either. But they would have felt no alarm in making way for him, however grave and compelling such an apparition might be. For he is brotherly, akin to us in another and deeper sense than are the denizens of bush and field. These exertions are like Jacob's wrestling, a sure gain for the wrestler himself. Indeed, this is what matters, first of all, page 133. York gained his clear insight into the basic character of history as virtuality from his knowledge of the character of the being which human Dasein itself possesses, not from the objects of historical study, as a theory of science would demand. The entire psychophysical datum is not one that is. Here, being equals the being present at hand of nature, but one that lives. This is the germinal point of historicality. And if the consideration of the self is directed not at an abstract I, but at the fullness of myself, it will find me historically determined, just as physics knows me as cosmically determined. Just as I am nature, so I am history, page 71. And York, who saw through all bogus defining of relationships and groundless relativisms, did not hesitate to draw the final conclusion from his insight into the historicality of Dasein. But on the other hand, in view of the inward historicality of self-consciousness, a systematic that is divorced from history is methodologically inadequate. Just as physiology cannot be studied in abstraction from physics, neither can philosophy from historicality, especially if it is a critical philosophy. Behavior and historicality are like breathing and atmospheric pressure, and, this may sound rather paradoxical, it seems to me methodologically like a residue from metaphysics not to historicize one's philosophizing, page 69. Because to philosophize is to live. There is, in my opinion, do not be alarmed, a philosophy of history. But who would be able to write it? Certainly it is not the sort of thing it has hitherto been taken to be, or the sort that has so far been attempted. You have declared yourself incontrovertibly against all that. Up till now, the question has been formulated in a way which is false, even impossible. But this is not the only way of formulating it. Thus there is no longer any actual philosophizing which would not be historical. The separation between systematic philosophy and historical presentation is essentially incorrect, page 251. That a science can become practical is now, of course, the real basis for its justification. But the mathematical praxis is not the only one. The practical aim of our standpoint is one that is pedagogical, in the broadest and deepest sense of the word. Such an aim is the soul of all true philosophy, and the truth of Plato and Aristotle, page 42 and the following pages. You know my views on the possibility of ethics as a science. In spite of that, this can always be done a little better. For whom are such books really written? Registries about registries. The only thing worthy of notice is what drives them to come from physics to ethics, page 73. If philosophy is conceived as a manifestation of life and not as the coughing up of a baseless kind of thinking, and such thinking appears baseless because one's glance gets turned away from the basis of consciousness, then one's task is as meagre in its results as it is complicated and arduous in the obtaining of them. Freedom from prejudice is what it presupposes, and such freedom is hard to gain. Page 250. It is plain from York's allusion to the kind of difficulty met with in such investigations that he himself was already on the way to bringing within our grasp categorically the historical as opposed to the ontical, ocular, and to raising up life into the kind of scientific understanding that is appropriate to it. The aesthetico-mechanistic way of thinking finds verbal expression more easily than does an analysis that goes behind intuition, and this can be explained by the wide extent to which words have their provenience in the ocular. On the other hand, that which penetrates into the basis of vitality eludes an exoteric presentation. Hence all its terminology is symbolic and ineluctable, not intelligible to all. Because philosophical thinking is of a special kind, its linguistic expression has a special character. Page 70 and the following pages. But you are acquainted with my liking for paradox, which I justify by saying that paradoxicality is a mark of truth, and that the communis opinio is nowhere in the truth, but is like an elemental precipitate of a halfway understanding, which makes generalizations. In its relationship to truth, it is like the sulphurous fumes which the lightning leaves behind. Truth is never an element. To dissolve elemental public opinion and, as far as possible, to make possible the moulding of individuality in seeing and looking would be a pedagogical task for the state. Then, instead of a so-called public conscience, instead of this radical externalization, individual consciences, that is to say, consciences, would again become powerful. Page 249 and the following pages. If one has an interest in understanding historicality, one is brought to the task of working out a generic differentiation between the ontical and the historical. The fundamental aim of the philosophy of life is tied up with this. Nevertheless, the formulation of the question needs to be radicalized in principle. How are we to get historicality into our grasp philosophically, as distinguished from the ontical, and conceive it categorically, except by bringing both the ontical and the historical into a more primordial unity, so that they can be compared and distinguished? But that is possible only if we attain the following insights. 1. That the question of historicality is an ontological question about the state of being of historical entities. 2. The question of the ontical is the ontological question of the state of being of entities other than Dasein, of what is present at hand in the widest sense. 3. That the ontical is only one domain of entities. The idea of being embraces both the ontical and the historical. It is this idea which must let itself be generically differentiated. It is not by chance that York calls those entities which are not historical simply the ontical. This just reflects the unbroken dominion of the traditional ontology, which, as derived from the ancient way of formulating the question of being, narrows down the ontological problematic in principle and holds it fact. The problem of differentiating between the ontical and the historical cannot be worked out as a problem for research unless we've made sure in advance what is the clue to it by clarifying, through fundamental ontology, the question of the meaning of being in general. Thus it becomes plain in what sense the preparatory, existential, temporal analytic of Dasein is resolved to foster the spirit of Count York in the service of Dilthey's work.
Chapter 6. Temporality and within-timeness as the source of the ordinary conception of time. Section 78.
The incompleteness of the foregoing temporal analysis of Dasein. To demonstrate that temporality is constitutive for Dasein's being and how it is thus constitutive, we have shown that historicality, as a state of being which belongs to existence, is at bottom temporality. We have carried through our interpretation of the temporal character of history without regard for the fact
that all historizing runs its course in time. Factically, in the everyday understanding of Dasein, all history is known merely as that which happens, within time. But throughout the course of our existential temporal analysis of historicality, this understanding has been ruled out of order. If the existential analytic is to make Dasein ontologically transparent in its very facticity, then the factical ontico-temporal interpretation of history must also be explicitly given its due. It is all the more necessary that the time in which entities are encountered should be analyzed in principle, since not only history but natural processes too are determined by time. But still more elemental than the circumstance that the time factor is one that occurs in the sciences of history and nature, is the fact that before Dasein does any thematical research, it reckons with time, and regulates itself according to it. And here again, what remains decisive is Dasein's way of reckoning with its time, a way of reckoning which precedes any use of measuring equipment by which time can be determined. The reckoning is prior to such equipment, and is what makes anything like the use of clocks possible at all. In its factical existence, any particular Dasein either has the time or does not have it. It either takes time for something or cannot allow any time for it. Why does Dasein take time and why can it lose it? Where does it take time from? How is this time related to Dasein's temporality? Factical Dasein takes time into its reckoning without any existential understanding of temporality. Reckoning with time is an elemental kind of behavior which must be clarified before we turn to the question of what it means to say that entities are in time. All Dasein's behavior is to be interpreted in terms of its being, that is, in terms of its temporality. We must show how Dasein, as temporality, temporalizes a kind of behavior which relates itself to time by taking it into its reckoning. Thus, our previous characterization of temporality is not only quite incomplete in that we have not paid attention to all the dimensions of this phenomenon, it also is defective in principle because something like world time, in the rigorous sense of the existential temporal conception of the world, belongs to temporality itself. We must come to understand how this is possible and why it is necessary. Thus the time, which is familiar to us in the ordinary way, the time in which entities occur, will be illuminated, and so will the within-timeness of these entities. Everyday Dasein, the Dasein which takes time, comes across time proximally in what it encounters within the world, as ready to hand and present at hand. The time which it has thus experienced is understood within the horizon of that way of understanding being, which is the closest for Dasein. That is, it is understood as something which is itself somehow present at hand. How and why Dasein comes to develop the ordinary conception of time must be clarified in terms of its state of being as concerning itself with time, a state of being with a temporal foundation. The ordinary conception of time owes its origin to a way in which primordial time has been leveled off. By demonstrating that this is the source of the ordinary conception, we shall justify our earlier interpretation of temporality as primordial time. In the development of this ordinary conception, there is a remarkable vacillation as to whether the character to be attributed to time is subjective or objective. Where time is taken as being in itself, it gets allotted preeminently to the soul notwithstanding. And where it has the kind of character which belongs to consciousness, it still functions objectively. In Hegel's interpretation of time, both possibilities are brought to the point where, in a certain manner, they cancel each other out. Hegel tries to define the connection between time and spirit in such a manner as to make intelligible why the spirit, as history, falls into time. We seem to be in accord with Hegel in the results of the interpretation we have given for Dasein's temporality and for the way world time belongs to it. But because our analysis differs in principle from his in its approach, and because its orientation is precisely the opposite of his in that it aims at fundamental ontology, a short presentation of Hegel's way of taking the relationship between time and spirit may serve to make plain our existential ontological interpretation of Dasein's temporality, of world time, and of the source of the ordinary conception of time, and may settle this in a provisional manner. The question of whether and how time has any being, and of why and in what sense we designate it as being, cannot be answered until we have shown to what extent temporality itself, in the totality of its temporalizing, makes it possible for us somehow to have an understanding of being and address ourselves to entities. Our chapter will be divided as follows: Dasein's temporality and our concern with time, section 79, the time with which we concern ourselves and within timeness, section 80, within timeness and the genesis of the ordinary conception of time, section 81, a comparison of the existential ontological connection of temporality, Dasein and world time, with Hegel's way of taking the relation between time and spirit, section 82, the existential temporal analytic of Dasein, and the question of fundamental ontology as to the meaning of being in general, section 83.
Section 79.
Dasein's temporality and our concern with time. Dasein exists as an entity for which, in its being, that being is itself an issue. Essentially ahead of itself, it has projected itself upon its potentiality for being, before going on to any mere consideration of itself. In its projection, it reveals itself as something which has been thrown. It has been thrownly abandoned to the world, and falls into it concernfully. As care, that is, as existing in the unity of the projection which has been fallingly thrown, this entity has been disclosed as a there. As being with others, it maintains itself in an average way of interpreting, a way which has been articulated in discourse and expressed in language. Being in the world has always expressed itself, and, as being alongside entities encountered within the world, it constantly expresses itself in addressing itself to the very object of its concern and discussing it. The concern of circumspective common sense is grounded in temporality, indeed in the mode of a making present which retains and awaits. Such concern as concernfully reckoning up, planning, preventing or taking precautions, always says, whether audibly or not, that something is to happen then, that something else is to be attended to beforehand, that what has failed or eluded us on that former occasion is something that we must now make up for. In the then, concern expresses itself as awaiting, in the on that former occasion as retaining, in the now as making present. In the then, but mostly unexpressed, lies the now not yet, that is to say, this is spoken in a making present which is either awaitingly retentive or awaitingly forgetful. In the on that former occasion lurks the now no longer. With this, retaining expresses itself as a making present which awaits. The then and the on that former occasion are understood with regard to a now. That is to say, making present has a peculiar importance. Of course, it always temporalizes itself in a unity with awaiting and retaining, even if these may take the modified form of a forgetting which does not await anything. In the mode of such forgetting, temporality ensnares itself in the present, which in making present says preeminently, now, now. That which concern awaits, as what is closest to it, gets addressed in the forthwith, im sogleich. What has been made proximally available or has been lost is addressed in the just now, im soeben. The horizon for the retaining, which expresses itself in the on that former occasion, is the earlier. The horizon for the then is the later on, that which is to come. The horizon for the now is the today. Every then, however, is, as such, a then when. Every on that former occasion is an on that former occasion when. Every now is a now that. The now, the then, and the on that former occasion thus have a seemingly obvious relational structure which we call datability, Datierbarkeit. Whether this dating is factically done with respect to a date on the calendar must still be completely disregarded. Even without dates of this sort, the now, the then, and the on that former occasion have been dated more or less definitely. And even if the dating is not made more definite, this does not mean that the structure of datability is missing or that it is just a matter of chance. Wherein is such datability grounded, and to what does it essentially belong? Can any more superfluous question indeed be raised? It is well known that what we have in mind with the now that is a point of time. The now is time. Incontestably, the now that, the then when, and the on that former occasion are things that we understand, and we also understand in a certain way that these are all connected with time. But that with this sort of thing one has time itself in mind, and how this is possible and what time signifies, these are matters of which we have no conception in our natural understanding of the now and so forth. Is it indeed obvious then that something like the then, the now, and the on that former occasion is something we understand without further ado and quite naturally bring to expression? Where do we get this now that? Have we found this sort of thing among entities within the world, among those that are present at hand? Manifestly not. Then have we found it at all? Have we ever set ourselves to search for this and establish its character? We avail ourselves of it at any time without having taken it over explicitly, and we constantly make use of it, even though we do not always make utterances about it. Even in the most trivial, offhand kind of everyday talk, it's cold, for instance, we also have in mind a now that. Why is it that when Dasein addresses itself to the objects of its concern, it also expresses a now that, a then when, or an on that former occasion when, even though it does so mostly without uttering it? First, because in addressing itself to something interpretatively, it expresses itself too, that is to say, it expresses its being alongside the ready to hand, a being which understands circumspectively and which uncovers the ready to hand and lets it be encountered. And secondly, because this very addressing and discussing, which interprets itself also, is based upon a making present, and is possible only as such. The making present which awaits and retains interprets itself. And this in turn is possible only because, as something which in itself is ecstatically open, it has in each case been disclosed to itself already and can be articulated in the kind of interpretation which is accompanied by understanding and discourse. Because temporality is ecstatico-horizonally constitutive for the clearness of the there, temporality is always primordially interpretable in the there, and is accordingly familiar to us. The making present, which interprets itself, in other words, that which has been interpreted and is addressed in the now, is what we call time. This simply makes known to us that temporality, which, as ecstatically open, is recognizable, is familiar, proximally and for the most part, only as interpreted in this concernful manner. But while time is immediately intelligible and recognizable, this does not preclude the possibility that primordial temporality, as such, may remain unknown and unconceived, and that this is also the case with the source of the time which has been expressed, a source which temporalizes itself in that temporality. The fact that the structure of datability belongs essentially to what has been interpreted with the now, the then, and the on that former occasion becomes the most elemental proof that what has thus been interpreted has originated in the temporality which interprets itself. When we say now, we always understand a now that, so and so, though we do not say all this. Why? Because the now interprets a making present of entities. In the now that lies the ecstatical character of the present. The datability of the now, the then, and the on that former occasion reflects the ecstatical constitution of temporality and is therefore essential for the time itself that has been expressed. The structure of the datability of the now, the then, and the on that former occasion is evidence that these, stemming from temporality, are themselves time. The interpretative expressing of the now, the then, and the on that former occasion is the most primordial way of assigning a time. In the ecstatical unity of temporality, which gets understood along with datability, but unthematically and without being recognizable as such, Dasein has already been disclosed to itself as being in the world, and entities within the world have been discovered along with it. Because of this, interpreted time has already been given a dating in terms of those entities which are encountered in the disclosedness of the there. Now that, the door slams. Now that, my book is missing, and so forth. The horizons which belong to the now, the then, and the on that former occasion, all have their source of ecstatical temporality. By reason of this, these horizons too have the character of datability, as today, when, later on, when, and earlier, when. If awaiting understands itself in the then and interprets itself, and thereby, as making present, understands that which it awaits, and understands this in terms of its now, then the and now not yet is already implied when we assign a then. The awaiting which makes present understands the until then. This until then is articulated by interpretation. It has its time as the in-between, which likewise has a relationship of datability. This relationship gets expressed in the during this, or meanwhile, währenddessen. The during can itself be articulated awaitingly by concern, by assigning some more thens. The until then gets divided up by a number of from then till thens, which, however, have been embraced beforehand in awaitingly projecting the primary then. Enduring gets articulated in the understanding one has of the during, when one awaits and makes present. This lasting, dauern, in turn, is the time which is manifest in temporality's interpretation of itself. In our concern, this time thus gets currently but unthematically understood as a span, spanne. The making present, which awaits and retains, lays out a during with a span, only because it has thereby disclosed itself as the way in which its historical temporality has been ecstatically stretched along, even though it does not know itself as this. But here a further peculiarity of the time which has been assigned shows itself. Not only does the during have a span, but every now, then, and on that former occasion has, with its datability structure, its own spanned character, with the width of the span varying. Now, in the intermission, while one is eating, in the evening, in summer, then, at breakfast, when one is taking a climb, and so forth. The concern which awaits, retains, and makes present is one which allows itself so much time, and it assigns itself this time concernfully, even without determining the time by any specific reckoning, and before any such reckoning has been done. Here, time dates itself in one's current mode of allowing oneself time concernfully, and it does so in terms of those very matters with which one concerns oneself environmentally, and which have been disclosed in the understanding with its accompanying state of mind, in terms of what one does all day long. The more Dasein is awaitingly absorbed in the object of its concern, and forgets itself in not awaiting itself, the more does even the time which it allows itself remain covered up by this way of allowing. When Dasein is living along in an everyday concernful manner, it just never understands itself as running along in a continuously enduring sequence of pure nows. By reason of this covering up, the time which Dasein allows itself has gaps in it, as it were. Often we do not bring a day together again when we come back to the time which we have used. But the time which has gaps in it does not go to pieces in this lack of togetherness, which is rather a mode of that temporality which has already been disclosed and stretched along ecstatically. The manner in which the time we have allowed runs its course, and the way in which concern more or less explicitly assigns itself that time, can be properly explained as phenomena only if, on the one hand, we avoid the theoretical representation of a continuous stream of nows, And if, on the other hand, the possible ways in which Dasein assigns itself time and allows itself time are to be conceived of as determined primarily in terms of how Dasein, in a manner corresponding to its current existence, has its time. In an earlier passage, authentic and inauthentic existing have been characterized with regard to those modes of the temporalizing of temporality upon which such existing is founded. According to that characterization, the irresoluteness of inauthentic existence temporalizes itself in the mode of a making present which does not await but forgets. He who is irresolute understands himself in terms of those very closest events and befallings which he encounters in such a making present, and which thrust themselves upon him in varying ways. Busily losing himself in the object of his concern, he loses his time in it too. Hence his characteristic way of talking, "I have no time." But just as he who exists inauthentically is constantly losing time and never has any, the temporality of authentic existence remains distinctive in that such existence, in its resoluteness, never loses time and always has time. For the temporality of resoluteness has, with relation to its present, the character of a moment of vision. When such a moment makes the situation authentically present, this making present does not itself take the lead, but is held in that future which is in the process of having been. One's existence in the moment of vision temporalizes itself as something that has been stretched along in a way which is fatefully whole in the sense of the authentic historical constancy of the self. This kind of temporal existence has its time for what the situation demands of it, and it has it constantly, but resoluteness discloses the there in this way only as a situation. So, if he who is resolute encounters anything that has been disclosed, he can never do so in such a way as to lose his time on it irresolutely. The there is disclosed in a way which is grounded in Dasein's own temporality, as ecstatically stretched along. And with this disclosure, a time is allotted to Dasein. Only because of this can Dasein, as factically thrown, take its time and lose it. As something disclosed, Dasein exists factically in the way of being with others. It maintains itself in an intelligibility which is public and average. When the now that and the then when have been interpreted and expressed in our everyday being with one another, they will be understood in principle, even though their dating is unequivocal only within certain limits. In the most intimate being with one another, of several people, they can say now and say it together, though each of them gives a different date to the now which he is saying, now that this or that has come to pass. The now which anyone expresses is always said in the publicness of being in the world with one another. Thus, the time which any Dasein has currently interpreted and expressed has as such already been given a public character, on the basis of that Dasein's ecstatical being in the world. Insofar, then, as everyday concern understands itself in terms of the world of its concern and takes its time, it does not know this time as its own, but concernfully utilizes the time which there is, escaped, the time with which they reckon. Indeed, the publicness of time is all the more compelling the more explicitly factical Dasein concerns itself with time in specifically taking it into its reckoning. Section 80. The time with which we concern ourselves, and within timeness. So far, we have only had to understand provisionally how Dasein, as grounded in temporality, is, in its very existing, concerned with times, and how, in such interpretative concern, time makes itself public for being in the world. But the sense in which time is, if it is of the kind which is public and has been expressed, remains completely undefined, if indeed such time can be considered as being at all. Before we can make any decision as to whether public time is merely subjective, or objectively actual, or neither of these, its phenomenal character must first be determined more precisely. When time is made public, this does not happen just occasionally and subsequently, On the contrary, because Dasein, as something extatico-temporal, is already disclosed, and because understanding and interpretation both belong to existence, time has already made itself public in concern. One directs oneself according to it, so that it must somehow be the sort of thing which every man can come across. Although one can concern oneself with time in the manner which we have characterized, namely by dating in terms of environmental events, this always happens basically within the horizon of that kind of concern with time which we know as astronomical and calendrical time reckoning. Such reckoning does not occur by accident, but has its existential ontological necessity in the basic state of Dasein as care. Because it is essential to Dasein that it exists fallingly as something thrown, it interprets its time concernfully by way of time reckoning. In this, the real making public of time gets temporalized, so that we must say that Dasein's thrownness is the reason why there is time publicly. If we are to demonstrate that public time has its source in factical temporality, and if we are to assure ourselves that this demonstration is as intelligible as possible, the time which has been interpreted in the temporality of concern must first be characterized, if only in order to make clear that the essence of concern with time does not lie in the application of numerical procedures in dating. Thus, in time reckoning, what is decisive from an existential ontological standpoint is not to be seen in the quantification of time, but must be conceived more primordially in terms of the temporality of the Dasein which reckons with time. Public time turns out to be the kind of time in which the ready-to-hand and the present-at-hand within the world are encountered. This requires that these entities, which are not of the character of Dasein, shall be called entities within time. The interpretation of within-timeness gives us a more primordial insight into the essence of public time, and likewise makes it possible to define its being. The being of Dasein is care. This entity exists fallingly as something that has been thrown. Abandoned to the world which is discovered with its factical there, and concernfully submitted to it, Dasein awaits its potentiality for being in the world. It awaits it in such a manner that it reckons on, and reckons with, whatever has an involvement for the sake of this potentiality for being, an involvement which, in the end, is a distinctive one. Everyday circumspective being in the world needs the possibility of sight, and this means that it needs brightness, if it is to deal concernfully with what is ready to hand within the present at hand. With the factical discloseness of Dasein's world, nature has been uncovered for Dasein. In its thrownness, Dasein has been surrendered to the changes of day and night. Day with its brightness gives it the possibility of sight. Night takes this away. Dasein awaits with circumspective concern the possibility of sight, and it understands itself in terms of its daily work. In thus awaiting and understanding, it gives its time with the then when it dawns. The then with which Dasein concerns itself gets dated in terms of something which is connected with getting bright, and which is connected with it in the closest kind of environmental involvement, namely the rising of the sun. Then, when the sun rises, it is time for so-and-so. Thus Dasein dates the time which it must take and dates it in terms of something it encounters within the world and within the horizon of its abandonment to the world, in terms of something encountered as having a distinctive involvement for its circumspective potentiality for being in the world. Concern makes use of the being ready to hand of the sun, which sheds forth light and warmth. The sun dates the time which is interpreted in concern. In terms of this dating arises the most natural measure of time, the day. And because the temporality of that Dasein which must take its time is finite, its days are already numbered. Concernful awaiting takes precaution to define the thens with which it is to concern itself, that is to divide up the day, and the during the daytime makes this possible. This dividing up in turn is done with regard to that by which time is dated, the journeying sun. Sunset and midday, like the sunrise itself, are distinctive places which this heavenly body occupies.
Its regularly recurring passage is something which Dasein, as thrown into the world, and giving itself time temporalizingly, takes into its reckoning. Dasein historizes from day to day by reason of its way of interpreting